You are now listening to the Two Dads Run podcast, just two dads who run, talking about running and being dads and some other stuff.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Two Dads Run podcast. And this is Kevin.
This is Gray.
So, Gray, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm the only one running.
I asked that question because, you know what, Gray, that's the only damn question I care about. Yeah, there's only one question.
Yeah, this
is I'm not running.
The pre-show crosstalk is going to be a little one-sided here for a little while, I guess. But no, man, everything's good. Went for a 7-mile run today, which is actually pretty long for me for midweek. I usually keep it pretty short, 3 to 4, but got out there today. Felt pretty good. A little warm. Nice weather though. So how's rehab going?
Rehab is going actually pretty good. I started picking up yoga. I was called a middle-aged man not too long ago for the first time here recently. Ouch. Yeah. And it did not feel good, but as I thought about it more, I'm like, yeah, you know what? My age does define the middle-aged man right now. And with the last injury that I just had, I know I need to take care of my body more as I start to put it through some suffer. And what was it? Just this past weekend, I had the girls while Adria was focusing on her masterclass, and the girls are already going apeshit at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday morning. I'm like, all right, what can we do to calm down? I was like, you know what? Dad just picked it up this week. I'm like, girls, let's do this. So we actually put on some YouTube TV and did some yoga Saturday morning. And yeah, I'm a bit sore, yeah. Believe it or not. Well, and it was a kid's one, but it was fun, man.
You're sore from a kid's yoga
From a
class.
Kid's yoga.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
They had you going for 30 minutes straight. And it was this one from England, too. So it's kind of neat. And the girls, for whatever reason, like the girls are addicted to like TV shows from England. Like Peppa Pig, when they're growing up, there was like crack cocaine for them. And then now.
Oh, dude, I get it. Where mine are stuck on toy reviews. And a lot of these toy reviews are in foreign languages. Sophie barely speaks English at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we're listening. I think earlier today we were watching something that was
the Russian one.
It was like Swedish or something. Yeah. It was a little baby. She's obsessed with babies.
Okay.
Like any kind of baby, toy baby, real baby, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So she's obsessed with babies. And so she watched a baby toy review in like Swedish or Russian or something.
Yeah.
I think we
got a friend that actually watches that, Chad Campbell. He watches little baby toys.
He does, or his daughter does.
You know, I could have got the text message mixed up. Sorry, Chad. No, I'm just messing with him.
Yeah. And speaking of Chad's, since you're broken for the next little bit, I've had to replace you, sir. So yeah, the Sunday long run, you have been replaced.
Yeah.
But it's by a fellow triathlete. And he's a good dude. He likes to run and he likes bourbon. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like me. And, I'll tell you, Gray and I actually had the chance to catch up before we hit the record button, and hearing Gray's story about what's been going on over the last week, I'm like, I feel like my girlfriend is cheating in front of me, and it's okay.
He's all up in his feelings about this.
So
that's okay. You broke yourself, so it's not my fault.
But so for today's show, what are you excited about?
I'm excited for a couple reasons. I'm really excited to listen to this interview again because it was a lot of fun. So, and B, I'm excited because it's our first triathlete. So I am not the triathlete guy on the show. That is Kevin's domain. I know very little about it. It's to me, it's very confusing. There's all kinds of different distances and things like that. But you know, when Kevin told me that he had landed this pretty big time triathlete guy, I was like, okay, cool. You know, like you steer the ship and I'll just kind of, you know, interject whenever I have a question. Turns out I had lots of questions. So, the guest that we're talking about is Ben Canute. I'll let Kevin kind of give you his background cause I'm not, you know, still not all that familiar with it, but he was awesome. Super great guy. He was very, very, patient with my questions.
there was a couple ones where if he could probably maybe reach his arm to the mic and
he was very patient with my question, so I would definitely appreciate that. But Kevin, tell us about give us a rundown of his credentials here.
Yeah, I mean, so what's been pretty cool about what we've been doing the last few episodes is both of us being runners when we first met each other, but our passions kind of veered us off in a way where you went strictly running, track and road running, and I went into the triathlon world. So I got to learn more about the world that I left, which has been neat, and talk to a lot of people that I've kind of reconnected just through social media. And then you've been able to see, I mean, you come in, there's triathlete magazines all over the place, and you know, the different events I've got coming up. So yeah, this one, you know, speaking with who you guys will hear very soon, with Ben Canute, hands down, I mean, he's a badass. And what really why I wanted to, you know, us and you to, you know, get a chance to meet and speak to Ben was, you know, with just like pretty much with every athlete that we've met, where they're a parent, they're a spouse, and they do what they love and they're very passionate about at a very high level. And it's just fascinating because when, you know, you and I talk, like, hey, how's your day? I mean, granted, we're keep busting our ass still, but it's so cool to relate to, you know, what some of these people are doing. And, you know, Ben, for those of you that don't know who Ben Canute is, I mean, look right now. I mean, as of today, I was just kind of just messing, you know, just looking at some of the results. I haven't seen him in a while, but with the Collins Cup, so the PTO organization, they've got this awesome cup that the Americans versus, I believe it's the Europeans and the International. So yeah, so those three different teams, and each one of those teams, they get to, so there's a lot of rules behind it. Anyways, long story short, Ben's representing the U.S., kicking ass right now. He's number four with that. Went to the Rio Olympics. He had a pretty cool, funny video. If you haven't seen the video, where he unfortunately didn't make the walk, that awesome walk that the athletes make into the stadium. The opening ceremonies. So he did his walk, I believe, in Arizona, like down his street, and his buddies are on the side. He's wearing the American gear getup.
That's awesome.
And then you'll also hear some of the other badass stories and the sacrifices that he had to make. So former Olympian, Alcatraz multiple winner, Escape from Alcatraz multiple winner. I mean, one year he just, the year I was there, I won't even say I competed in that. That thing was just like, hey, let's just go out and have fun. But I remember seeing Ben flying down as I'm going up some of these large hills in San Francisco. And then also the way he plans on doing for the future Olympics. So we got to talk to him about upcoming Tokyo and then some of the other races that on the Ironman circuit he's got going on. But for everybody in the triathlon world, they should and definitely will be stoked to hear Ben talk about what's it like being a dad and a triathlete.
And get to hear him get asked a question he's never been asked before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So enjoy, everyone.
Yep.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Two Dad Runs podcast. Gray and everyone out there, I'll tell you, I'm very excited. We get to welcome a U.S. Olympian, a 70.3 world champion runner-up, multiple national championship winner, and back-to-back Escape from Alcatraz winner. One of those years, Ben did whip my ass, but as you guys got the hint, most importantly, I have all those titles, a husband and father, Ben Canute. Hello, sir.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Excited.
Yeah, welcome, Ben. So you get stuck with me, who is a total triathlon noob, and you are, other than Kevin, you are the only triathlete I've ever spoken to. And then you got Kevin, who has done a couple of races. So I'm going to be along for the ride, and we're going to let Kevin steer the ship here.
Perfect.
Well, Ben, we definitely appreciate you joining us today. And, you know, one of the things that we like to do when we talk to our guests is really kind of relate what we do. We love sport. We've been involved in sport for a very long time. As Gray's mentioned, I just love triathlon. Having a swimming background growing up, that it really kind of was just an easy transition for me. But, you know, people like Gray, and we've got a lot of people that we connect with that are just straight runners, and they're always asking me about triathlon. But would you mind, you know, tell us about yourself? You know, the accolades speak for themselves, but Ben, would you mind just telling us a little about yourself?
Thanks. Yeah, on the sporting side, I did a little bit of everything growing up, but my parents put me in swimming pretty early on when I was about 7-ish years old, and I'm a little bit unique in the triathlon world where I was able to hop into kids triathlon when I was about 8 or 9 and was just kind of history from there. There was a kids triathlon team that was kind of founded by the same people who put on the little kids race that I did. My parents were heavily involved in it. My dad was racing when I was young and my mom raced as well. And from there, I just kept gravitating back to the sport and just loved it because of the team I was on, the people that was around. And I just thought it was the coolest thing to kind of push yourself super hard and just see how fast you can go, the sweet bikes, all that stuff. And yeah, but aside from that, was a good student. Parents always pushed me just in general to be the best that I can be. And I guess luckily for them or unluckily, I was very competitive. So it didn't take too much convincing. So I just kind of made everything into competition.
So you must have been a pretty different kind of 8-year-old
yeah.
to get into a triathlon. That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I think that everybody kind of, you learn how to swim. And then I think parents who especially grew up with boys who have a lot of energy, you put them in the sports that burn a lot of that energy off. So that was a little bit of my parents' plan, and just we had some neighborhood kids that were going to the same swim team. And I think a lot of endurance athletes, sometimes people would describe us with a little bit of a screw loose, but it's all good fun.
Well, awesome. And on top of that, Ben, as I mentioned, you know, some of the important titles out there. So husband and father. So that's all kind of been recent within your racing career. So how are those two titles treating you and then racing overall? How has that changed the way that you've approached the sport now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think just before that, like I'm all about balance, and that's kind of how I've approached triathlon and life in general. And I'm a really hard worker and love the sport and go at it 100%, but always like to take a step back and have like another side to myself as well. And have a wonderful wife who I married last year before all of the COVID stuff went down in early January. And we found out a few months. Yeah, exactly. So got to have the big party before everything kind of shut down and happened, and got to go on the honeymoon and all of that. So that was fun. But yeah, and then a few months later, we found out we were pregnant. We're super excited. And really, even before that, that was just before everything shut down. So really got to enjoy the pregnancy and have been loving it. She was born, our daughter was born on December 4th. Which is just 10 days before my birthday. So perfect timing, an early birth, and have just, you know, fallen in love all over again.
Dude, that's awesome. Definitely just, congratulations there.
Thanks. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like I've embraced the whole dad strength and really kind of figured out like, hey, that's what it's all about. Cause she just gives me a different type of energy that I didn't have before.
And I'll tell you, just because as you've been able to see, especially you growing up in the triathlon world, but anybody that gets into that triathlon community, it is a small community and it's a very supportive community for people like yourself, Ben. I know that a lot of the age groupers like myself love to line up with someone like you to just kind of say, okay, here's my shot. Yeah, it's not going to happen. But just the camaraderie within the sport. So I'm getting to the point. So with your daughter being born, you shared a pretty cool story that the triathlon community was just like, oh my goodness, it's just so crazy. But you were able to kind of, I loved your take on it, but would you mind telling us about, because you were actually racing and you were away when your daughter was born. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that was the Challenge Daytona, the PTO championships. And Yeah, it was a family decision for sure with my wife, and my parents were actually in town before my daughter was born to be here for the birth, help out where they could. And thank goodness they were, because we made the hard decision for me to leave, and we thought all the signs were good. We were trying to predict when my daughter was going to come, and
first mistake.
We thought we were good. And basically, yeah, when the plane took off and I landed, Courtney started kind of going into labor and tried to hold off. And you know, I gave my daughter, and when she was still inside, I gave her a little pep talk, like, you got to wait for me to come back. Like, don't come out just yet. Like, I'm gone for like 2 or 3 days. I went out last possible minute and really just tried to cut the trip as short as possible. But she wanted to show me who's boss. And yeah, like you said, it was the first mistake was trying to plan it all out. And when it was the Friday before the Sunday or even Saturday race, I believe. And I was doing pre-race interviews and everything that whole day, but I got the call early in the morning that quarter.
So then I can promise you that will not be the first time that your daughter doesn't listen to you. I'm sorry, it won't be the last time. It was the first time, but it definitely will not be the last.
Exactly. I know she came out showing me who's boss, and I think that we're going to probably butt heads and just have a little bit of that friction throughout the whole time, but I love it. And it was definitely tough to be away, but Courtney was amazing through it all. Had a little bit of support from my mom, who was able to stay back here to help out. And it was me then trying to get through that race and get home as soon as possible.
So how were you able to, I mean, it's such a gigantic moment. How were you able to kind of come from that? You're already there at for race weekend. How are you able to mentally get back in the racing mindset, you know, and pivot from one to the other?
Oh, I like to think that I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing and preparing for the race and kind of putting that off to the side and then saying, okay, I've got to, you know, make the trip worth it. I've got to whatever, have a great race. And, beforehand, I just tried to focus on what I could do and stay in the now moment. But looking back on it, I mean, it's a hard thing to recover from and get back into the race. And 2020 was a huge year for us, in general, even without my daughter being born. So that on top of it, with the training I was able to squeeze in and having that weekend just, you know, kind of explode that way. I think that it gave me kind of an average race. There's probably some, I don't think I would go back and change anything, but when I really break it down, that was definitely something that was difficult to race with and be away from. But again, I got to come back to the best thing in the world after that trip.
Oh, absolutely. That is. And so 4 months now, right? Pretty much right now, yeah, 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, she was 4 months, actually exactly on Easter. So yeah, she's like 4.5-ish right now.
So what are some of the milestones right now? Just because 7 and 5, you see the pictures and it's like yesterday, but you kind of forget. So what's happening now at 4 months that you're getting excited about?
Yeah, well, she's real good at focusing on us, turning for her name. She's been rolling over. I think she wants to get mobile pretty soon. She's a real good squirmer right now and loves to kick her legs. And once she figures out how to push up, I think it's just kind of full speed from there with her motoring around. So got the first lap out of her too. So all of those are real fun milestones.
Oh yeah, dude. Once they get mobile, man, it's a total game changer.
Yeah, I know that it's just going to be so fun when that happens, but it's hilarious to hear different parents talk about it because some are like, oh yeah, mine was walking so early, or I was lucky. Mine didn't walk until like a year on, and so I didn't have to baby-proof the house for this amount of time. So it's funny to hear that and then live it a little bit.
Oh yeah, it's really impressive the speed at which they can completely dismantle your entire house.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
So Ben, with that, because just kind of piggybacking off of what Gray, and I think that's, you know, I think that's really kind of important for I would say for a lot of people to know someone like yourself, where you've got a lot of events coming up, and you know, you've got the Olympics that's actually coming up, and you're very, and to get to this point, you've been very regimented, and you throw the responsibility of a child where, you know, as you mentioned, that you try to plan it, it's just not going to happen the way that you want to. So what about your approach now with your eating habits, your sleep, your training, and then more importantly, your mental wellness? What are you doing differently? Because you say balance. So I guess how do you create the balance, and are you approaching it the same way prior to having your daughter, or is it still the same way?
There's obviously things that are different, but I mean, I got to give Courtney a ton of credit here. My wife has been amazing taking care of Briella, and she's put on, taking on quite a bit of the work. So that allows me to recover at certain times and to just be prepared for the races. And right now, when Briella is so young and with COVID, Courtney's hung back with Briella for the first two races, just to be safe and kind of taking on the whole load of taking care of her on her own here. So that's allowed for us to, you know, have the triathlon career. And then when I come home, I try and give her a break where I can, and you know, give a couple bottles here and there to allow her to take some naps and recover. And really, it's just making sure that we communicate a lot and make sure that we're both getting the rest that we need. And yeah, just allowing for, like you said, there's a lot of big races coming up, and it just takes a little bit more planning. And you know, I'm a planner at heart. I like to plan out my day. I like to kind of plan out ahead what we're going to do. So I've enjoyed that a little bit. We've just had to kind of talk about that and make sure that we're both on the same page and that our day is a little bit more structured than maybe beforehand.
So how have you handled the lack of sleep? I know you try to plan that stuff as best you can, but my youngest is only, she's 2.5. So we're not that far removed from her deciding not to sleep for about 7 months of her life. So how has that impacted your training and recovery?
Yeah, I think you just have to take it day by day. And I think that we timed her birth, as, you know, as unfortunate of the day that it was when I was gone, that time of year is actually pretty good for us in terms of training and racing. So for some of those months where it was, you know, oh, they're only sleeping for 2 hours at a time, I could help out where I could. And, you know, as the guy, it's a little bit more challenging because Courtney's breastfeeding. So you kind of hop in when you can, because otherwise it's usually when they're crying that they want a bottle or something like that, or to eat. So, yeah, if she's inconsolable or something, I try and step in. But basically it's I think Briella's nap time is our nap time, just kind of catching those little short periods of sleep when you can, especially at the beginning when it's just so crazy those first 6 weeks. And thankfully, you know, Briella's not too bad with the sleeping, but yeah, it's just trying to trade off. And if I get a little bit more sleep at a certain time, trying to take over at you know, in the morning, maybe early on, and let Courtney sleep in.
Well, if whoever gave you the advice of sleep when they sleep, you need to send that person like a fruit basket or something, because that's key.
So, yeah, I know. We had a few people telling us that, and you know, we tried to pick that up as soon as possible. And I was a bit of a napper even before Briella, and I was looking forward to taking naps with her, like with me on the couch or something like that. So that was fun.
Yeah, those are definitely the best naps. So, I mean, so 2020 was obviously hard from a global standpoint. You had a pretty solid 2020, got married right at the beginning, you know, had a new addition to your family, which is tremendous. You know, but obviously having, you know, races canceled and pushed back, and the Olympics and all of these, you know, your family and friends, especially with so many monumental moments happening in your life, you know, maybe some of that interaction was maybe a little more limited than it would have been under normal circumstances. I mean, was it, you know, with what were some other things other than, you know, Briella and marrying your lovely wife, you know, what were some of the things that brought some positivity into an otherwise pretty tough situation? Or did you have anything like that, or was it just those two?
No, I mean, we kind of took 2020 almost as, I mean, I looked at it as almost like a, not a sabbatical from triathlon, but just like, I mean, just kind of like a refocusing year almost. Like I tried to hold fitness from March through May, just on the hopes of, you know, maybe somebody will have a race, maybe we'll get back into it, things will calm down. And by the time May happened, it was basically a, let's take this year to focus on some of the weaknesses that we have, specifically like focus in on the run, and you can get that done pretty quickly. And we spent the whole summer in Arizona, which is pretty brutal. And we had one of the hottest summers on record. So focusing on the run was a little bit better, just because you can get it done pretty quick and you didn't have to put in 3 to 4 hours of base work on the bike or anything like that. So that allowed me to take a step back. And we were living in a condo when we found out we were pregnant. So we set to work and we found a house that we were able to move into. And basically I was kind of focused on that a bit and just kind of hanging out and just enjoying having one place to be and not scrambling all over the world and traveling a whole bunch and just the craziness that our summers and spring and fall usually are. We just kind of slowed down and enjoyed being in one spot for a while and just, yeah, kind of made the most of, I guess, quarantining overall.
Yeah. I mean, and we have asked that question to almost every guest we've had on to this point, and that's kind of been the resounding. And I think that's kind of the answer for a lot of people. It's just a refocus, right? You know, like, let's take a look at some of the things that are super important to us. And let's, you know, let's be a little more thankful for the small things too, that we no longer can do, like go to the movies or, or whatever. Yeah. And even from a sport perspective too. So, as I mentioned earlier, I am a triathlon noob. I don't really know much about the sport at all, but other than, you know, obviously its components and things like that. But one of the things that I learned about you when I was reading about you is your race mentality. It just from kind of reading it, it sounded like, you know, you were somebody who was going to leave everything out on the course, a la Steve Prefontaine from the track world. And hey, you know what? You might beat me, but you're going to have the race of your life to do so. Is that just kind of like an innate thing that's ingrained in you, or is that something you developed over time?
You know, I think I've had that in me, but I think it goes back to just my hard work ethic. And that starts with my dad and my parents and just instilling that if you work hard, you can see improvements and if you set your mind to something, you can accomplish it. And early on, I wasn't the most talented person, like in the water, on the bike or running, but I just really worked hard. And over the years, I think my coaches have all considered me just kind of a workhorse or somebody who I do what I'm told and I'll go out there and work hard. And I've learned to work smart as well. And I think that's just how I race too. Like I like to put my head down and just go and test myself. And that's kind of how I can cover everything from really short distances that are super intense and it's don't make any mistakes, but just go all out and sustain that, to some of these longer 4-hour races where maybe you can't race as much on emotion or anything like that, but you pace yourself out and you try and squeeze every last drop out of that sponge that you've soaked up during training. And there's just something satisfying about that too. I think that some of my most satisfying and the races that I'm the most proud of are not necessarily some of the wins that I've had that are easy. It's some of the races where I feel like I've had almost a completely perfect race, or I've gotten everything out of myself, but maybe I was whatever, second, fourth, tenth, and some of those. And there's just that intrinsic, I guess, satisfaction that you get knowing that you did everything that you could. And that's what I try and do every race, is like, if I can perform to the best of my ability and do what I've been doing in practice and leave everything out on the course, that's a great day for me. and that's mission accomplished. And if people are better than me, then I got to go back to work. And that's a problem for kind of like the future. And that's what I have to go back. And that's the bar that's been raised. But on the day, like I can't control what other people are doing. I just can control how I race, how I respond to things, and my effort that I put out there.
Oh, yes.
Oh, dude, I love it. Absolutely love it. So I've got one more kind of beginner triathlon question for you.
Look at the noob. He's just like, oh my goodness.
Because
it's been nice talking to you, Ben. Great. Sorry, we'll take it over from now.
I'm going
to
hijack Kevin's interview.
No, this is us having a good time. But go ahead, Matt. I know you're excited.
So from a triathlon, you mentioned earlier from a talent level and the different disciplines that you guys compete in, which one do you hate the most?
That's interesting. I've never had somebody ask me which one I hate the most. They always ask me which one I like the most. So honestly, that's an even tougher question, because my usual response is to which one do you like the most is like, I don't really like that question, because I think I do triathlon because it always changes. Like I think that I have certain times when, you know, I really love swimming when it clicks. And sometimes I go through a period where I'm really grinding it out and it's just hard to jump in the pool. But then, you know, recently I've really, really loved the run, and I've really liked going out and racing that specifically. It's been clicking recently, and you know, maybe it's the bike right now or something like that. But I think it really changes, and I don't know if I ever hate any of them, but there are definitely moments in each one of them where I'm not having fun during that moment. And then on the flip side, you know, like the next day or even later in that workout, there's a time when I'm really, really enjoying it. So, that was interesting. That's the very first time I've ever been asked that question.
I'm just sitting here like dying.
Well, there's a reason I asked that, because you know, Kevin tells me about his races, his triathlons and stuff like that. And always the non-starter for me is the swim. I mean, there's just no way I could do that. So that's why I asked that, because I was wondering if that was going to be your answer too.
Yeah, well, the joke is too that, with triathlon, we're mediocre at three sports instead of, you know, specializing and being the best at one. But I always like to bring up too, I think it's hilarious to watch peer swimmers go run and watch the peer runners go swim and that sort of thing. So, I think it's interesting though, because I think triathlon has really come a long way, where a lot of times you might get like the whatever peer runners just coming in and dabbling just because it's something different. And you'd see that in the races then as professionals. But now it's just becoming such a specialized sport. You're almost getting like, hey, like triathletes almost look a certain way now. Like runners look a certain way and swimmers look a certain way. But now we're getting like these people who are specializing in swim, bike, run, and you know, it's just the one sport. It's not really the single sport athletes as much coming in, and it's kind of cool because it means the sport's growing and the bar just keeps getting raised.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think every year is kind of neat to see who's crossed over into the triathlon world, where you'll have some of the former Tour de France cyclists entering the triathlon world. And Greg keeps me up, and I started as a swimmer, but then in high school and college, I did running. But Greg keeps me up to date as far as all the runners that are transitioning into that sport. But overall, 2020 and even recently, triathlon's getting a lot of, you know, I think a lot of awesome and cool publicity. The PTO, the Professional Triathletes Organization, the Collins Cup. How's all that feel for you? What are some of the things that you're excited about, Ben? That's going on in the triathlon world.
I mean, that's one of them right there. And I think the PTO has done a fantastic job at creating, like a buzz around the sport. And, they're doing it in a way that seems to be an investment for the long term, because triathlon has had, you know, some influxes of money throughout the years with big races like the Hy-Vee Triathlon, Island House. You've had, just kind of a number of these unique races that have this huge prize purse. It attracts the best field and it creates a lot of drama because there's a lot of money on the line, and you get some of the best racing that you've seen at some of these races that but then they disappear after the money kind of dries up. Whereas this is like, looks like the professionals and especially a handful of people who are running the PTO, and they're creating this investment in the sport to make it interesting, to create drama, to invest not just in, you know, the Collins Cup or the PTO championships in Daytona, but especially during COVID, they've injected their own money into like the local races to get pros racing there and to make sure that it was taken care of. So I think it's awesome. I'm really interested to see how the Collins Cup goes. My past couple races, I'm hoping it put me on the map for that a little bit, and I'll get a start on that start line. But yeah, I think that any sort of racing like this, I'm always game. And I think that they've done a really fantastic job when you look at Challenge Miami and Challenge Daytona of videotaping and broadcasting two really exciting races. And I think they've been exciting because of how they treat everybody who races. Whether it's age groupers or professionals, they really make it about the people who are racing, which is pretty cool.
Oh yeah, and I, you know, watching it from my standpoint, and just watching it live, it's kind of neat what they've done to make it even more entertaining. Where they have the markers that are above you as you're racing, like if you were actual a NASCAR at the track, and you had some of the people speaking to you. Moments in the transition or for some, I'm not sure if anybody, when they actually got put into the penalty area that they were speaking to, but just as far as you feel like you're even on top of the race by watching it. So it's neat from a spectator's standpoint, but from yours, it's kind of cool to hear, you know, this is what the professional athletes, you know, do get excited about. So when you start taking care of us and knowing that, you know, we're bringing a lot of recognition to the sport, we want the sport to grow. And have more people to, you know, to be excited. So that's awesome. So talking about,
I think it's going to be really cool too, like at, in Daytona and some of these racetracks, once you can get crowds in there, because, I mean, it's just, I think from a crowd standpoint, the whole action is right in front of you. And, you know, from, whatever your support crew being out at the races or you watching a race yourself, a lot of times you see people go out on the bike and you don't see them again for 2 hours. Like the race that I just did last weekend, if there was anybody there watching you, unless you had a car that you could drive out somewhere, you basically watch whoever you're supporting go out of transition, and then you don't see them until they come back in, you know, 2+ hours later. So I think that the multiple laps and having the crowd all right there is something that can make triathlon just that much more spectator friendly.
Absolutely. And we'll get guys like Gray to put on a kit and come out there and get a bike.
Someone donate a bike to me, please. I'm there.
Yeah. So I will make that happen.
So Ben, is there a race, race course or a specific race that you miss in the world right now that you're just kind of, you know, just drool and get back to, because this is just, you just feel so connected to it?
You know, I'd say that probably the one on the circuit right now that I really, really like is Escape from Alcatraz. I've been there 4 times and won it 3, and it's just such a unique course where you're jumping off the boat, you're swimming, like you can almost hardly see where you're going to get out. You basically have to pick a big building that's behind it, and it just goes back to the roots of where, like, the original triathletes were. Basically, they didn't really care about distances necessarily. They weren't necessarily looking for like PRs or anything like that. They were just like, let's make this a challenging course. Like, what do we think is hard? We're going to jump off. We're going to swim from Alcatraz Island into shore. Then we're going to bike up and around like the Golden Gate Bridge up to the park out here and come back. And then we're going to run, you know, out to the beach and turn around at the end of the beach and come back, and whoever crosses the line first wins. And I think that that's just really cool because it makes for a really unique distance that you don't really see. And it's just one of those races that's just really pretty challenging overall, just because of the conditions and just racing the course, let alone, you know, the other good athletes that show up.
And I'll say, and I will tell you that not just because you're on the show, but because I've told Gray and all my other close buddies that, that kind of asked me, like, hey, what race do you like? It's Alcatraz. And how about that year? And the year I did it, Ben, was, I believe it was when it was the year that, one of the years that you'd won, but the swim got canceled.
And yeah, that was my, the first year that I won it. And that was crazy.
Oh, were you as bummed out as I was? Did you actually make it on to the ferry and then did they kick you off, or had you, had your bus not got there yet?
Yeah, no, we got dropped off there, and I think we were walking on as they were making that announcement that it was, that we should all get off or something like that. And yeah, that was crazy because, I mean, the swim is one of my, my stronger legs, and that, that swim is obviously pretty unique and a lot of fun. And I mean, for nobody expects the swim at Alcatraz to get canceled because they've been doing it for, you know, over just about 40 years or so. And they that was the first time and the only time so far that they've ever canceled the swim. And I mean, You can't fault them for making the call with how crazy the current and the waves were, and when it's a small craft advisory and they can't get the safety boats out there. And I actually know, like, the guy who helps, who announces and who plans out kind of the plan A, B, and C. And they have, like, specific markers where they're like, hey, if it's too rough, we'll move in closer so that they don't have to cut across. And if it's too rough there, we'll move in all the way up until the point where they're like, we'll basically have them jump off the boat and swim like 50 meters into shore, essentially. So when I heard it was getting canceled, I'm like, wow, it must be like really pretty terrible out there because, yeah, they just, if you can't have people like to scoop people up before they get swept out to sea, that's, yeah, it's a pretty, pretty crazy swim course.
Well, appreciate you walking down memory lane with that. I actually had no idea that it, they actually had those types of plans in place. It was pretty crazy. And yeah, and
knowing you guys aren't exactly talking me into joining this sport.
I mean, it was only 55. I'm not sure what it was, but no. Well, cool. So, Ben, what, you know, as you look ahead right now, so what are the things that you're getting excited about? What are some of the, What are some of the Canute goals that, that you have going on, meaning like with your wife, Courtney, and your daughter? And what about some of the future goals that you have planned for in the racing world?
Yeah, as far as racing, I think that it's really awesome to have a world championship on U.S. soil, and that's the Half Ironman World Championships in St. George in September. So that's always a goal is to win that race, especially this year with it being in the U.S. and, you know, within a 7-hour drive from my front door. And then also qualifying and winning a medal on the Olympic team this year in Tokyo. And then as far as family goals, I mean, we're just trying to hopefully, as COVID clears up, travel to see family a little more, let them all be able to see Briella as she, as she's still pretty young right now. And she's been pretty, we've been sheltering in place kind of for the most part, just kind of laying low. So we're looking forward to kind of getting out there a little bit more, seeing some friends and family, and introducing our daughter to the world.
That's awesome. That's a really fun time. I mean, like I said, I mentioned it earlier, you know, you have all these big things happening. You get married, you have a, you know, you have a daughter and all, you just want to show her off to everyone, and it's kind of like, ah, you can't do that. I can't imagine, you know, how difficult that must have been. So I know you guys are really looking forward to that. So
yeah, thanks. We definitely are.
Yeah. I don't blame you. It's the greatest thing in the world. But being a really big running shoe dork, I gotta know, you mentioned the running is going well for you right now. What are you running in right now?
Yeah, so I work with Hoka, and I've been really liking their Rocket X's. So that's still like one of their carbon plated shoes that they have, but it's just a little bit stiffer and a little bit lighter, I think, than their Carbon X2, which I also really love. But yeah, the Rocket X is the one that I've been racing in so far.
How about for like a daily? What are you using for that?
Yeah, honestly, like, I like a lot of their shoes, but the Clifton, I think they're on the number 7 now, is one of the ones that I use the most. And then I'll throw in the Bondis every so often for like a super plush, like, recovery shoe if I'm just really dragging. But then, yeah, basically I've rotated through a few of their others, like the Cavus and the Mox, but, and then, you know, they have some other like, shoes. I think they sell them on their site, but also just for like the professionals, they have this super light. It's called the Rehi, like R-E-H-I. And it's honestly the lightest shoe. It's like wearing a slipper. And I use that for quite a lot in, like the super sprint stuff. We're just having like a 1500 meter run. And that's been kind of a cool shoe as well.
Awesome. One more new question. I find myself coming up with more, you know, the more I listen to you, you know, teach me. So from a training standpoint, I mean, you know, running 5-6 days a week, how are you, and then I'm assuming you're doing 2-a-days almost every day. Is that correct?
Yeah, for the most part.
So is it broken up? Is it like just, are you biking and running one day and then biking and, or, you know, biking and swimming the next day? How does that schedule out?
Yeah. So we've worked through a number of different programs over the years. And right now we're on kind of like a 7-day cycle, but it rotates out as being like a run heavy week, bike heavy week. Then it might go through that cycle like once or twice, or even 2.5 times. And then you take a rest week, test week, kind of see where we're at and then continue on. And usually, you know, that's starting back in January and had my first race after like about 10 weeks in. So you could get through a few of those cycles and then you start tapering and stuff. But, well, I'll do most of my important workouts, hard workouts in the morning. And some days we'll stack hard workouts, but there's usually a priority to either hit the bigger bike or run workout in the morning. And then in the afternoon, it could be, you know, the secondary. It might end up if the run was really hard, the bike might just focus a little bit more on strength versus, you know, really trying to jam it super hard. But it's just kind of balancing with my coach, like the fatigue levels and kind of taking that hard day, slightly easier day the next day, hard day. And then, yeah, we put in like a little bit lighter stuff to induce some volume. So, really it's just taken kind of a bit of experimenting and talking. And what I love about my coach too, is he's never like, hey, my way or the highway. He talks with a lot of other smart people and we draw from them as well. So, honestly, like I understand kind of the structure of what we do, but when it gets down to like how they take this plan out of nothing and put it in my program, I give my input once I see like the full plan up there. But other than that, I put a lot of trust in my coach and the people he works with to help structure that out so that I'm either A, not like under training and giving myself too much time off, or be overtraining, which and doing too much, which I think is one of the two options, obviously, that I would end up doing if I was trying to coach myself.
No, I mean, you guys have an amazing amount of respect for me. I mean, you guys are monsters. I love it.
Well, and it varies so much between the athletes. Like I see guys who train 30 plus hours a week and do crazy volume on the bike, and all they basically do is like 6 hours of training a day and then recover. And then there's other guys who honestly don't need that much overall, who are really just kind of sharpeners. They do some hard training and they put in the work training, their different, energy levels and their thresholds and, their lactate levels and everything, their different zones. And then they don't have to do like crazy volume and stuff. So triathlon's still in that, like, I don't think it's, and it can be like running in a lot of ways where some people can take those 100-mile weeks, but some people hover more around 60 or 70 and maybe do a bit more quality than a lot of volume. So, it's pretty interesting to see what works for different people, but when it comes down to it, yeah, it's just kind of figuring out like what works for you and, finding that correct balance.
So your training is very impressive, Ben. Is there anybody on the pro circuit, meaning your peers right now, like you were just talking about, where you know a little bit about their training schedule and you're just like, oh my God, how in the world? Is there anybody that's out there right now where you're just, thank God it's not me?
There's a number of those guys who are out there who I see doing like 150-mile bike rides or 200-mile bike rides. And you'll find some half Ironman and Ironman guys who do a lot of crazy volume. But I think universally who you can go to, and it's, they take it very science-based, but their approach is very much like, let's get like every ounce of hard work, talent, fitness we can get out of you in a short amount of time, and then you can go off and live the rest of your life. I think they're looking very much at a short period of excellence and seeing what they can do rather than the longevity of a career. And that's the Norwegians, and they put in a crazy amount of work at altitude, going up and down. And I've seen them put in crazy bike rides, and they do on the track just tons, like 10K plus of work, sometimes of repeats. Jeez. And that sort of stuff, just back to back. And yeah, they're workhorses, and it shows, like when you watch them race too, they're pretty nuts.
Wow. So you mentioned altitude training. What would be a piece of advice that you would get somebody, that you would give to somebody that's living at sea level, that doesn't necessarily have the time to travel out to any type of elevation, but to train for a race that's going to be a high elevation? So I'll let you know, in December, I'm doing
that. His name rhymes with Schmevin.
So I'm doing the Patagonian in Chile in December, and I'm pretty stoked about it, but I'm concerned as far as like the altitude and the training. I can get the training done, but what kind of advice or suggestion would you give somebody like myself? Cause I'll tell you, there's quite a few other guys that are out there. I was like, God, I'm not sure how I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. I would say first off is to just make sure that you pace it conservatively when you go out there. Cause obviously like when you have your training here, it's going to be a little bit different to do that at altitude. And, then if you're looking for adaptation similar to altitude, I would say look into a little bit of heat training, doing it around like some aerobic type work, like overdressing for a couple workouts a week, but only for like, you know, 30 or 45 minutes, and then sauna work. I've worked with some people who are very adamant that shows a lot of similar adaptations to with the body when you train like that you get at altitude, but you don't have, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks of trying to ease yourself into high altitude training. But I will say, when I've worked at altitude before, take your time like getting into it. And even at the race, like I think overall, it's not Patagonian. is a longer race, so it's not like you're trying to do a threshold effort. I think it's just making sure that you feel correctly, pay attention to your nutrition, and just kind of get yourself into the race and find your rhythm, and don't worry as much about the numbers early on, and just don't go out too hard at altitude.
Appreciate the advice.
Well, luckily for him, we don't have any lack of heat here in North Carolina. So in the summertime, he can get out there and sweat, you know, to his little heart's content.
Yeah, exactly. And heat's one of those things too, that I almost think training in the heat a lot of times is harder than altitude.
Oh, I agree. I'm the same way.
Yeah. I went out for a run today and it was 79. I was thought I was dying. It was after running in 40 degree weather for the last 3 months. It might as well.
Yeah, and that's probably with humidity too, right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, 79 is pretty brisk out here in Phoenix. We don't start sweating until it hits the 90s, I think.
Well, Ben, so what's the next race that you've got that's on the schedule?
The next race is 70.3 St. George coming up.
That's right,
in May 1st.
Utah. How you feeling about what's the field look like for you?
Well, they haven't officially announced who's there. I think they're announcing that at some point this week. So still waiting on that, but it should be a good one because it's the North America Championship. So I think you'll see kind of all the main U.S. players and anybody really who's been around in North America, since it's like a pretty big race. I think they'll all travel, and then you'll get a handful of Europeans too that come over.
Well, fantastic. And we wish you the best of luck. Definitely hoping for a championship for you. Ben, thank you for sharing your story as far as, you know, being an athlete, but more importantly, being a husband and father. We really do appreciate the conversations, and we will be wishing you and cheering you on as you chase Olympic gold in Tokyo. But Ben Canute, thank you for your time. And
yes, thanks, Ben. Thank you so much.
Enjoy, sir. Good luck in your next race.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
All right, guys, thank you so much to Ben Canute. We really appreciate him for joining us today. That was a lot of fun talking to him. I'm very appreciative of him taking the time to explain some triathlete stuff to me and Kevin, you know, for taking a few minutes to compose himself after my awkward questioning. But he was awesome. Kevin, what do you think, man?
It was fantastic to just hear him talk to us on really what I'd have to think most athletes that are like in your spot that are even just thinking about doing triathlon, but more so that's part of the running world. And then myself, who's competed, just kind of know a little bit what's going inside those athletes' minds, and especially the ones that are juggling the responsibilities of being a spouse, being a parent, and then in this case with him being Olympic hopeful here. So no, it was great, man.
Awesome time. And thank you, the listener, for checking us out. If you like the show, please subscribe. You can also check us out on all the social medias, Instagram at Two Dads Run Podcast, Facebook at Two Dads Run Podcast. You can also email the show if you like, twodadsrun@gmail.com, or me and Kevin both have our own little personalized emails, gray@twodadsrun.com or kevin@twodadsrun.com. If you have guest suggestions or anything like that, anything, you know, topics you'd like to hear us cover, we'd really appreciate it. And thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye, everyone.